Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
Hello, and James Dowse.
Oh, hello there.
Hello, shaking things up for once this week, because we're all playing the Elden Ring. Now, I don't necessarily want to make the whole show about Elden Ring, but we'll see how we go. To be honest, it is pretty brilliant. And we've already done a video on it. Me and Josh did a podcast on it on Monday. And no doubt me and Jules will do some more stuff on the Untitled Banter Pod on Friday.
Yes,
because it's just that big of a deal. But at the same time, you know, it is selling ridiculously well. So I think it is worth focusing on it a little bit. I know you guys, Jules, you're like 20 hours in or something.
I am so deep in the smell. Elden Ring.
How deep are you?
Oh, the thing is, I can't actually say for fear of ruining it for some other players, but let's just say I'm in another world.
Oh, well, see, funnily enough, if we're passing that as a spoiler, I spoiled that on Monday. I went down underneath the map and I found the whole other man.
When
thing.
That happened. Yeah. Oh, wait. We've got to look at James's face. We are trying to.
I am not that far through.
Okay, right. Okay, so don't ruin anything more, Scott. We're going to have We're going to have to tread carefully around this this locus of grace right
it
here
is
that
thing
is James Towns.
It's a thing because it's like, what do you class as a spoiler with this game? And so like me and Josh kind of came down on like, well, if it's something that you'd rather see yourself, then we'll class that as a spoiler. So there's way more to the underworld overall in Elden Ring, unless you're classing the fact that it exists as a spoiler, which I could see the argument for. But I think that there's so much in this game. I had a thing last night where I found another map fragment, and I've already found about three or four, so the map's quite big. I found another one, and it just doubled the whole size of everything so far. So I was like, how big is this game? Like, it's kind of ludicrous. Dallas, what's been your thoughts so far? Because I know this is your first FromSoft game. So how are you finding it?
So I've never played a Dark Souls, a Demon's Souls. I knew the difficulty was there. Mm. And the second I turned the game on, I realized that the difficulty was there, because you face that tree sentinel man with a...
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Horn, he's just waiting for the... He's just outside of the main gate. He just goes like, there's some little animals around the side here that you can have. I am an absolute hard nut. don't even try and mess with me.
I tried stealth killing him. Like, I was hiding in the bush, just waiting for him. And then eventually I got one hit on him and he just flattened me again.
Yeah. It's incredible. Like, it really is very, very tough, and it really tests you as like a gamer, really, to see how good you actually are. Mm-hmm. And then, as I say, I don't want to spoil it, but the first boss, Margaret or whatever it's called,
Large Margaret.
Good Lord, that was like. But the thing is, it got me on the edge of my sofa, so excited to be like, oh, one more go. Yeah, and I've not had that excitement in a game in so long.
Right.
I'm giddy now to go back on it. I think it's such a nice feeling.
James has actually highlighted a key part of what makes Elden Ring so special and very different to the Dark Souls, Demons, Souls, and obviously the Bloodborne, Sekiro stuff, is the fact that the reason you were so excited to get back in there is because how the game, one, frames that entire boss fight as like the first big challenge. It's very epic with the huge castle in the background, so you obviously know what you're going to unlock by defeating him. But also the fact that the bonfire or the respawn point is so close to the fog gate, you feel like one death here, one death there, I can keep going. And that they've had a problem, and I will call it a problem, that some of the bonfire runs to the bosses in previous Dark Souls games were too long. They were too arduous, and they were there just to frustrate you. And as many people will say, oh, it's all about like learning the enemies along the path and which to avoid and which to engage. It is detrimental to the fun of the experience to have to run past the same five people and spend 15 minutes getting to somewhere to learn a new pattern to die. Like, that's not as fun as it sounds on paper. The sort of go is perfect.
I think one of the things that they've, like, because it was interesting, I mentioned this on Monday's pod, but like Miyazaki said going into this, that they've made it less frustrating, but it's still challenging. It's still going to be stressful, but it's less cheap. And it's like, it is a very fine line to walk, but like, I know at no point did I feel like I was hard done by in a way that I felt in past FromSoft stuff, where like, I'm always learning in this. And everyone always says, oh, it's tough but fair in Dark Souls games. But all of us, if you played Dark Souls games, you've had a dick death. You've had something that's just stabbed you through a wall or pushed you off a cliff or whatever it is. And it's not that these things can't happen in Elden Ring, but I feel like overall it's a fairer game, let's say, like in terms of the way that you drink it all in.
Do you think it's because of the open world nature of it? It allows you to go, if you hit a brick wall, you think, right, okay, I just don't have to just hammer my head against this and for like 20 to 30 hours just trying to get past this one boss. I can go somewhere else, find something, find a challenge that is actually reflective of my skills and start bigging up and finding your character's personal growth, as it were.
We should talk about that stuff because like waypointing they handle it really interestingly in this, where you sort of like, you save at one of the bonfires, they're called like a point of grace or whatever it's called. And then it vaguely tells you, it's like, well, the next thing you need to do is over here somewhere. And it just points you in a vague direction with a beam of light that fades out. And it's up to you to just sort of wander in that direction when you're ready. And hopefully you'll find the next bonfire thing if you walk enough in that direction. But Jules, I know that you prioritize picking directions that weren't that, like where you're quote unquote supposed to go. So what have you kind of found and how have you been leveling up and all that kind of
thing? So I started off by spending a lot of time just out in the wilderness hunting after I got the crafting ability to sort of like make stuff with my bow and just go around just checking out the local wildlife. And that led me to explore different like little mini caves and mini dungeons with stuff like that. And because I beat the guardians, I won't call them like full on bosses, the sub bosses.
The big giant fellas.
Yeah, like things that like very easily after a while, you're like, okay, cool, I can take them down. So you go downstairs, you find like other... little mini dungeons that have extra rewards. And then I started like finding stuff that the game wasn't telling me about. Like I found new talismans. I found new things for like they were for the, what is it called? The physics? Is
that you get like a physics. It's called, it's spelled like, weirdly like, with like a K.
I'm trying not to ruin it for James in case he hasn't found it, but you'll find like almost like orbs that have no function for you until you find another item in the game. And when you do, you're like, oh, this is a game-changing feature because it allows you to, have you played The Witcher?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you used to like drink potions and stuff before you go into battle and it would buff you up. It is exactly that feature. Okay. It allows you to buff your character before you go into a fight. So it allows you to like mitigate a lot of the damage. And then I found more spirits to like summon. I found other things to call in help. I was like, oh, this stuff here, every bit that I go off and explore is making the main narrative that much easier because it's like, I feel like I'm overpowered in some places.
Because where do you guys come down on that side of it where it's like, you know, you could, there's absolutely, in Dark Souls 2, like Dark Souls 2 was sort of known for, at the very beginning, you're in this place called Medulla. I know you won't know what this is, Dallas, but a lot of people who like played Dark Souls 2, it was very easy to wander off into the first main area and not even talk to the person that gives you the healing item, the Estus Flask, the ability to level up. It was very possible to completely F yourself in that game. And I think that in a way, Elden Ring has a version of that. I mean, that you don't even have to talk to that first guy that's outside the starting area. You can just wander off in a different direction, and things like the summons, like Jules has mentioned, the physics stuff, you know, like the different talismans, the ashes of war, like ways, things that you almost arguably fundamentally need to get through, at least get through with a degree of enjoyability that isn't an endurance run. You can miss all those things. Where do you guys come down, or I guess Dallas, where do you come down on the idea that you can miss those things, and how have you found, like, I guess, the level of comfort or tutorialization across the game?
I felt like I was thrown in the deep end. Like, I really don't understand how these games work because I've never learned. So I spent the first 2 days or so not looking at anything online, just went for it, just figured out what I could do. And then I read a guide and not like a proper guide. It was not a proper.
No, don't guide shame him.
No. Just hear me out.
No,
I just typed in. What the hell do I do? I just type that in.
Just Google save me.
Yeah, what do I do? And then it said, oh yeah, by the way, at the intro, if you literally just turn left, there's a chest there where you can get a sword, whatever, for example. I was like, really? I never knew that. And it turns out because that's instilled in both of your minds, you know to look for things like that.
Kind of. The thing is, in this though, if you go like, let's say you go the other way, like you come out of the starting area and you do a 180 and go to the place behind you, there's an island off the shore that you can get to if you go through a dark. I finally went there last night. You've got to have a light source on you to get through a dark cave to get to that place and then fight a creature, which I saw people on Twitter saying that was the real first boss because that's the one that's closest to you. But that thing is way more furious than large marges. what I'm saying is the more you explore, you can find cool stuff, but you might also stumble upon something that'll just rip you in half because it's attacking 10 times faster.
Yeah. Well, like you said with Jules, when you said, Jules, that you was going where the Grace was telling you to go, you was going in a different direction.
Yeah.
I was following where the Grace was telling me to go.
Right.
Because I didn't know it.
A lot of people have done that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it led me straight to Margaret. And then when I got there, he absolutely destroyed me. And then I then decided to explore after that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized, oh, this is what the game is. I can explore millions of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tell you what I love the most about this game so much is that there's like emergent storytelling just around. Like it's not on the levels of sort of like your Skyrims with all these people having naturalistic conversations and stuff like that. But it's like that feeling of going out from the starting point to the east and along the main road, you'll encounter a procession of like a big funeral cart being pulled by two giants, throng of like people behind it.
Yep.
And I just sat there on top of a mountain and I watched it and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to attack this. I'm going to see where it goes. And I followed it for absolutely ages. And I was having the time of my life.
Does it actually do anything?
Well, I didn't actually get to
it. Just carries on.
Yeah, it just carries on. I got very sidetracked because a massive bear came out of a forest near where I was.
Have you fought that thing? That big sloth bear thing?
Slain the bear.
I thought I would just prod that thing in the thighs and it immediately whipped around and killed me in one hit. And I was like, well, all right then.
It scared the absolute piss out of me because like I saw it over in the distance. I was like, no, it's not going to attack us. It's like clearly just bound within the confines of that wood. Oh no, it came straight out. Baloo was having a word.
The thing that
sounding over.
I do absolutely love that test because the thing is, if you played old or any Soulsborne game, it's always that thing of realizing that enemies have certain zones to them, and usually their AI, they'll sprint after you to a point, and then they'll have to stop and they sort of like sidle around the zone that they've got to.
They walk back like God.
Exactly, because they're like, well, I can't go any further, but I do want to fight you. And so I've loved experimenting with that or seeing like if I go through this door, can this giant enemy get through it? And sometimes you'll get it where they've actually got crouch animations where they'll just come in after you, and it's like, oh God, okay, I'm just in this room with this thing now. Also you can also kind of gamify it a little bit that way too.
Have you guys ever if you got to the level where you experience pure unadulterated panic when you're riding Torrent? Have you got the horse yet, haven't you?
Yeah.
I do. So Torrent's my favorite thing about the game.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's
but the worst feeling is when you're riding along and then all of a sudden you'll start seeing notes from other players on the floor and you're like, okay, what's going on here? You carry on riding and all of a sudden Torrent disappears and you're like, oh no, what's going on?
What about him disappear?
When he disappears, it means that you're going to be invaded or locked into something in like a certain area, and man, that level of tension, like, where's it going to be? Where's it going to be?
Funnily enough, talking about key things you can miss, I don't have one of the key multiplayer items, so I can't summon people in. Like I can do the thing.
Yeah, you don't have the furled finger thing.
I've got it's
just
weird.
Buy that.
Right. Okay. So I've had a couple of the things where you ping the item and then different summon signs appear around you, which I think is the main way to summon people in. But you can also do that thing where you use it's like a T-shaped item and that just pings the nearby Marika
statues.
Summoning pools. Yeah. And so, but there's something that I read about last night where you can do something that then populates this specific summoning pool area with points to summon or something like that. It feels like I'm missing something because I've got two ways of interacting with other players, but not a direct thing to get them in. So
I find that there is like the only weird thing about Elden Ring is that as we've been discussing about having to go off to find the items that make the main quest easier, I do find that if you just plow straight on with the main quest, you're actually going to miss out so much of this game.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
you might actually like you're not going to complete quest lines. I can guarantee you that because there's a few which tell you, say like, oh, you need to be here, have spoken to that guy there, then to summon this person over here.
Yeah.
Like when you got to Margaret, did you guys summon anyone to help you out?
I did the first two fights because I always try and see if I can do it myself. Yeah, and then after a while, I was like, I'm going to just have fun. Oh, no, sorry. No, I beat Margaret second time myself. It was Godric that I summoned for.
Yes. Right, okay. So with the summon things there, did you use a spirit or did you use a summon, James?
I used the wolf spirit and I also brought
great
Roger
boys, by the way.
Was called in.
Yeah. Is that the sorcerer?
Yes. Was he called Roger?
Roger, I think is like...
Roger.
That's awesome, though. I've got like a giant flying poisonous jellyfish that helps me in the second
market
fight.
The jellyfish is the best. Because
poison damage continues to be the thing in a FromSoft game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, blood damage, blood loss is the one, man. It is bonkers broken at the moment. Like, I got a pair of daggers that is ridiculously quick blood loss because obviously you're attacking the quickest in the game. Mm. I've also got this thing, which is like the summon that I pulled in for Margaret was the woman with the hook claws. And she is devastating.
I've not even got that. All I've got is the wolves and the jellyfish.
She attacked him like 4 times and half his health bar went. And I was like, well, I guess I'm having an easy ride today.
I do love the fact that they can, because the thing is, in Souls, one of the reasons you would summon is to just draw aggro from a boss. Yeah. And I like that they've got a little sort of half-step measure of that you can just summon AI stuff in. But it's quite geographically dependent. Like sometimes you'll see the symbol just disappear because you can't summon them all the time. You can't do it indoors. You can only do it in certain areas in the world. But I do love doing it as much as possible.
What I absolutely love, though, is that there's obviously, whenever a From Software game comes out, the discussion of accessibility and difficulty settings comes up and how From Software have always been like, this is the Dark Souls experience. You either love it or hate it. We're not catering for it. There are a few ways to mitigate some of the challenge, but it is going to be punishing. Here, loads of people are just saying like, oh, Elden Ring's too easy. Elden Ring is this, Elden Ring is that. And it's like, no. You can still choose your own difficulty setting by ignoring the items that we've been talking about, ignoring the summoning, ignoring using certain things. Because I went up against Margaret a fair few times before I called in a summon. Whooped my ass. Like, I just wasn't ready for it at that time. And my character was getting like one shot, two shots.
Whereas I'd spent like 12 hours exploring the world. I came in, I was doing a decent amount of damage. Yeah. And then I didn't find the Margaret fight too bad, but the Godric fight absolutely flattened me. Especially that thing's second phase, which is just ridiculous.
But I don't feel bad about calling in the summons, the spirits or whatever, because the fact that I want this challenge to be something that I am enjoying. I don't want to be like, I'll save that for my second run where I'm going to say like, okay, no spirits challenge, no weapons leveling up challenge, like whatever. But I like that there's a sense of granularity to this experience that I feel was missing from the previous Dark Souls.
Well, it was always that thing of like pasting you into the floor and then you had to slowly overcome it, which is what made the series such a big deal. But I think they've kind of, you know, played around with that over time. And it doesn't need to be constantly aggressively oppressive. Like, you can give the player some things to turn the tide and that can feel incredible. You're still overcoming a series of incredible challenges. Like, it still feels awesome when you do that stuff. It doesn't feel like a cakewalk or anything. But yeah, I mean, I like how much they've sort of streamlined stuff. You can tell the different games that they're bringing in. Like, and it's just so much snappier and it just feels like this nice evolution of everything that they've done before. What do you guys think of all the...
What do you think of... Sorry, Scott. What do you think about the torrent compared to, like, Dark Souls and stuff not having that? What is it, a horse deer thing? What was it like not having that creature in the old games compared to having it in this one?
Well, I guess you wouldn't need it, would you? Because the other games weren't open world in this sense. They were like they were kind of
like giant dungeons kind of thing.
Yeah, it was like a big sort of like a hub system effectively. Mm-hmm. Like
it's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But I tell you what, being on Torrent, it does make the game very easy in certain areas.
I was going to say, have you cheesed any bosses yet?
And just go bang, bang, bang. Like, especially when you can drag your sword along the ground and just swipe up. I mean, it just looks so cool as well.
That's the thing. For me, like I said to Josh, like, I think that the horseback stuff makes and breaks the game simultaneously. Like, I love the feeling of it. I love, like, though, because there was that boss in Sekiro that just flattened you that was on horseback. And so whenever you get to do that now, it's like, well, how does it feel? Like, you can just flatten stuff and it's great.
But doesn't it feel a little bit like how when Sekiro gave you the grapple arm, it was kind of like allowing you to escape combat to fight on your terms? And a lot of people were like, oh, it does make the game a lot easier. But I genuinely thought it just added more tactical elements to the combat.
You have to burn a health flask to resummon Torrent if he dies. Yes. So like, you can only do that so many times in a really hard fight. But I just like the options that it gives you. Like, I love that all the different abilities work on, most of the Ashes of War abilities work on horseback. So you can do magic arrows off the back of it and stuff. And it just looks like a really cool Shadow of the Colossus style fight. Yeah. For me, it makes the game. Like, I think the opening of it is Dark Souls 101, and it's not until you get Torrent that it makes your mentality shift of like, oh, I can actually kind of go anywhere and double jump up these cliffs and really get out of there and explore. Torrent is the thing that elevates it for me. Like, I absolutely love what it brings to the table.
When I was destroying that tree sentinel creature at the beginning, all
did
I was
either
doing
of you guys beat
just,
that thing yet?
Yeah, I did it last night.
Nice.
But literally, night, all on Torrent, I just go past, swipe, run away, and then come back, and then swipe, and then run away, and then
get him stuck amongst the trees,
hour.
Idiot.
Yeah. It is very much for me. Just running away. That is all Torrent gives me. The freedom of running.
Well, the thing that like is in like, it's like a Soulsian mentality is like, it's not don't get greedy. Like the second that you try and get too many hits in, most of these games are coded to recognize that you're either button mashing or you're rushing or whatever it is. And then a boss will just wipe you out in one hit. So sticking and moving, hitting and running is definitely what you need to foster anyway. Mm-hmm.
Which is a real shame for my character at the moment, because like I say, blood loss buildup is his thing. So it's like, I have to get as many hits on as possible in order to get to trigger that blood loss break to do. But once I do, it's nearly like an instant kill for most things. But man, there is a few tense moments where I'm like, get the last hit, get the last hit.
We should very quickly talk about our builds, because I talked about mine on Monday, but mine's just a samurai build called Daisuke. I've got like my bow and arrow. I did have an Uchigatana katana, but I've replaced that with this crazy blood builder, blood strike blade that I found in the underworld. So I've just been using that. So my guy's kind of like an undead samurai with this like crazy blade that like he hits and spins back from every time he does a hit. So that's my dude. But Mr. James Dowse, how are you doing?
I have absolutely no idea.
What class did you go for?
Yeah, what did you pick?
There was a middle one, a right one, and a left one.
There's more than the three.
If you've got like five or six, I think.
It's like six.
Ah, mate, I just pressed whatever.
So, wait, if you went for the middle one, you went for Bandit.
No, I went probably for the one on the left, which was the person with the sword.
Just warrior.
Oh, it's like a warrior or something. Yeah. That's good. That's good for a first timer. Yeah.
I went for, and then Scott, I saw your tweet saying that you defeated Margaret with that Uchigatana. So I used that, and I found that in the catacombs or wherever you find it, or wherever you found it.
Mine started with it, but yeah.
Oh, okay. I looked at a guide and I found out where it was. And then I used it and then I beat Margaret.
So there you go. It's the large
killer.
I'd have
never known about that weapon if it wasn't for you. Or, and vice versa, like other things, I'd never have learned it. This game, you need a guide.
Well, one of the best things about it is that it I saw someone do a tweet of like, it reminds them of what gaming was like before the internet, where you had to tell your friends, and you come in like ready to talk about something in a way that we just like you do on forum threads and whatever. And we're looking to do this like in this situation, but it is one of those things where you come in going, oh my god, have you seen this yet? Have you tried this? Have you found this weapon? That's like the first time anyone goes through a FromSoft game, like the first time a community does as well, it's such an incredible feeling. Like the messages people leave each other, like, you know, summoning in to help each other, knowing that you're helping someone for the first time. I just love all that energy. Like all that stuff is what makes this incredible. Jules, how is your character build?
My character build is also a samurai. Just because I love the decks and the ability to use bows as well at range. And I've got the dual daggers at the moment. I do not believe in blocking. I am a pure relentless attack machine, because that blood build up, and I've got a few talismans that help me buff certain critical strikes and things like that. So I'm loving life at the moment. I still have my ass absolutely handed to me if an enemy hits me. But when I hit them, I am an absolute glass cannon of damage, and I'm loving it.
I really want to get into the dual wield. I've not found anything I can dual wield yet. All my stuff's been great swords. But then second, maybe dual wield the Uji Katana, but I need to find something else.
You can't dual wield with that.
I
think you can.
Okay,
you can
dual wield
any weapon, as it were, but you can't have, like, they usually don't drop two of the same.
They might have done the Dark Souls 3 thing where if your strength is high enough, you can maybe dual wield the great swords. I've seen someone had the Moonlight Green Sword in one hand and then something else in the other, so I think it is possible. It's just you need to get the stats up enough. But overall, though, Elden Ring incredible. We'll clearly be talking about it a hell of a lot. so I guess apologies to people who aren't on the Elden Ring train. It's just that it's the biggest train in town right now, so even if you're not on it, you're watching it go past and very much acknowledging it. But there are other things going on in the gaming industry that I thought we should just talk about a little bit, which is something that me and Josh did a news video on yesterday, which is Sony's Game Pass equivalent has been detailed a lot more. And the main thing I want to talk about is the fact that there's three tiers that have been leaked for it. It's PlayStation Plus, PlayStation Plus Elite, and PlayStation Plus Premium at $10, $13, and $16 a piece. And the PlayStation Plus Premium, being the top tier thing that you can opt into, gives you a library of PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation P games that you can have access to. And apparently they're going to be announcing this at a State of Play this month. If we're in March, are we in March yet?
We are in March
as of today. Slash tomorrow when this goes out.
I've never heard somebody call it PlayStation P.
What? PlayStation Plus, I think my microphone call.
Yeah. No, I think you meant PSP, did you not?
PlayStation, PSP games, like PS1, PS2, PS3, PSP. I, for one, resent PlayStation P, I'm just saying. Overall, this seems to be the thing that they're doing to try and get people across to their version of Game Pass, or at least be a one hell of a value proposition. So I wanted to put it out to you guys. What do you guys think of the idea of them sort of leaning on past generation stuff in a way that assumedly is going to be more than what Xbox are doing? Like, you can get 360 games, you can get original Xbox, but it sounds like they're going to be literally going for the players. This is old school stuff. If you want a PlayStation 2 library, etc. What do you guys think of all that stuff?
Out of
curiosity, are they being streamed? Like,
Streaming is only in the top tier. So if you get PlayStation Plus Premium, then yes, you have access to the Gaikai streaming. But this is all from leaked report stuff. So nothing's been said in regards to, if you can just stream a PS2 game or not. But streaming itself as something you have access to is only in the top tier anyway.
Right. I was just thinking, like, PlayStation Now, when you could only play PS2 and 3 games via streaming. I wondered if you could actually install the games onto your PS5 properly installed.
I would hope so. The middle tier for this, PlayStation Plus Elite, is the one that gives you access to what is now the PlayStation Now library, but that will apparently be downloadable going forward because they need to sell that as the Game Pass equivalent stuff. So it's going to be weird. I think that the way that they need to split it is, like, it lets them contend with Game Pass, but then they can also kind of maintain their £70 premium price point stuff for, like, Horizon, God of War, whatever. But if you opt into the top tier, you get all these old back catalog games, you get game trials for the newest games, you get timed access to stuff and streaming and everything else. But in terms of legacy content, it's like, is that a big enough pull? Basically, would you pay £16 to play old stuff again?
Personally, I would, because there's so many titles that I know I would love to play again and have them all on one space. I think that James raises a good point in the fact that if they aren't downloadable, then we might see eventually what would happen with the Wii U store closing down recently, or the 3DS store, I believe it was, where you lose access to all of your digital titles. Like, it proves above all else that you do not own your video games if you buy digital, which never a great thing unless you can install them onto a hard drive at some point. Mm-hmm. So I would say that if that is a case, I'm very prepared to pay for it. However, it comes with the caveat of, is it only going to be Sony first party video games?
That's
or have
crux.
They worked out stuff? Because let's face it, the amount of video games that we could probably list from our childhoods that are PlayStation 1, 2, and 3 games, they probably aren't Sony exclusive games outside of the core few. They're majority just amazing games that happen to be on those consoles.
Mm-hmm. James Dallas, what would you pay this moolah?
Unfortunately, I pay for the Nintendo expansion pass, so I think I'm stupid with my money anyway. So I'll probably.
And the Banjo Kazooie and Operation Winback. I don't know about you, but where else are you going to get it?
There is a big
lot
problem
of money
though
for that.
Because like all of this totaling up with your Netflix subscription, with your Disney Plus One, with this, with that, like how much are we actually paying per month on streaming services? It's going to start totaling into the hundreds of pounds at some point. It's going to be weird, man.
I'm only hoping that people move from Games Pass to their version. Like, I don't think many people will have both. I think they're trying to get rid of the audience from Xbox.
I guess that's the thing. I mean, it was one of the biggest it's weird because Xbox have had to lean on Game Pass so much because they don't have the exclusive pull. They don't really have the optics of, hey, come to Xbox to play this. It's more come to Xbox to get this big archive and value for money. And whenever someone asks me who's like more of a casual gamer, which console should I get? I always point them towards, right now I point them towards Xbox, unless you specifically want those exclusives, because sheer value for money, it just is there. So I think it depends how big that PlayStation Now library is. And then I guess if they throw in the back compat stuff or the legacy stuff as well, and you can stream early access to the top tier titles for a few weeks or whatever it is, then that's a hell of a thing. And I mean, the market share is there for the PlayStation. So maybe they're going for the kill and they want to pull people across. It just depends, I guess, how much they can match it. They definitely have a legacy catalog that Xbox don't have. Unless we get into this weird space where both Game Pass and whatever PlayStation's thing is called, it turns into a bunch of third party deals. Because like Jules said, it's like, you know, a lot of our favorite games like Soul Reaver, Resident Evil, whatever, they're gonna have to go to those third parties and just be like, well, we want to feature you for a month on this service, or we want to pay for you to be on this service. And then I wonder if they then go, well, so does the competition. So you know.
Yeah, and we end up with a possible thing where it's only available for a limited amount of time. Like,
that's what I would
remember the absolute the horror show that was the Mario All-Stars 3D collection, where it was only available for like a limited amount of time. If we end up having, you can only buy the Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3 pack on this PS Plus subscription thing for 3 months, then I don't know. It's utilizing nostalgia in a way that I don't appreciate, and I think that we should use FOMO to trade on game sales.
No, true. I do wonder, though, like in terms, because the way that Nintendo do it, and Nintendo are so backwards and ridiculous with this stuff, but I wonder the idea of saying, you know, something's available for the next month, like it's Resident Evil month, and we're giving you access to every single Resident Evil game for a month, and then they rotate that out. It's Metal Gear Solid month the next month. Does that encourage you or put you off trying those games out? Like, for me, I like the idea of, you know, diving into the original Resident Evil 2, and it's weird, like part of it is the FOMO thing, but it's also like, you know, maybe it encourages more people to try those titles, rather than just here's 500 things and you just get a Disney Plus style where it's like you never get around to everything.
Problem with that is if you don't like Metal Gear Solid, you're not going to subscribe for that month.
It's true. So I guess you would do it as like you would add it on as well as some bulk of titles that also justifies the price. But what games would you guys want on, like absolute dream titles to put on? Mine's Def Jam, which funnily enough, I saw Ice-T tweeting about
really?
In the last couple of days. He was like, I'll bring this, because he was like in Fight for New York, and he was like, I'll bring this back, it'll blow up again. And obviously that's been retweeted quite a lot. But yeah, in the words of Ice-T, bring back Def Jam 5 New York.
It's a tough call. I mean,
give me the Burnouts while we're on.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind playing the old Driver games, Driver 1 and 2. Quite fun.
They might have aged hilariously with the way Tana used to run like a stick man.
Oh yeah, they were really bad actually.
The thing that I really want is an SSX collection. I feel like SSX has just disappeared, but if you did SSX 1, Tricky, and 3, because you can play 3 on Series X and it's up-res and it looks gorgeous, but like you can't get Tricky anywhere.
It might be quite good if we could get the old Time Splitters collection back on some form as well.
They're on the Xbox now.
Yeah, they're on Xbox now. And like,
true. So we probably wouldn't.
I feel you called a new team that's doing the new Time Splitters, but it seems that they put Time Splitters 2 and 3 and Future Perfect out to like remind people, like, hey, by the way, it was great for a while.
Yeah.
So like, you might as well put that stuff out again.
Was that not THQ Nordic who bought.
Yeah, it's one of the new Fracture Studio. I think they're made by, they're staffed by some ex-Free Radical people. But there's also that GoldenEye remake on Xbox that might seem to be stoking the flames of that side of how shooters used to feel for a little bit.
So the weird thing with me with the PlayStation 1 and 2 era was I was but a child during that era. So like all of the games that I played were usually hand-me-downs from my older brothers, like the Tony Hawks and the Need for Speeds and the Drivers and whatever. But like the majority of my games were terrible. Like Dog's Life that I always say to Jules.
You always put that.
All
always
of these like, I don't know,
with the bark
Cat and the Hat game or SpongeBob's latest game, like all these kids games, which I just think their licenses have just disappeared into thin air. So like
hey, Toy Story 2 though. What a game.
There's that as well. Yeah. Oh, that was a game. That was a great
game. That was a game.
But like my era was based upon all of these movie tie-in games, which just don't exist anymore, I assume. And like your Kingdom Hearts, but that now exists anyway.
There's so like a window to bring it back.
PlayStation has a weird catalogue for me, but I understand the whole catalogue in general. But for me, I want to see buddy challenge the Chocolate Factory, the game.
Give me a Bug's Life. I mean, the thing is, like, I'm curious. Give me to be honest, give me Bugs and Taz Time Busters, and give me Bugs Bunny Lost in Time. If we're gonna go there. But I mean, in terms of the licensing stuff, I think the thing that'll get in the way of a lot of games, like the Burnouts, the Def Jams, and mostly anything EA did, is song licensing, because they have to go back and relicense all those songs, which is a whole other process than just emulation. So I don't know about that stuff. I mean, the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater remakes, it took them ages to get that song catalog together, and they almost missed two songs until they got near launch, and then the record company caved and said, oh, go on then, if everyone else is going to be in it, then we should be as well. But I wonder what kind of weird Herculean feat it even is to reapproach these games that had licensed songs and stuff in. But as an overall push, I am game for a monthly PlayStation service. I'm curious what you plug into that and whether it makes people realize how weirdly stuff has aged, whether it's for the better or not. And if you do something like a Metal Gear Solid month, if that ends up bringing, you know, like a whole new Metal Gear Solid in or not. Last talking point is the fact that according to a very well-known leaker who recently talked about the Pokemon Sapphire and Violet games ahead of time, and then they were proven right when that game got announced over the weekend, they've said that a major Sony franchise is returning in the fourth quarter of 2022, and it's already 70% complete. So I literally just wanted to end on what you guys think that might be. We're talking major Sony franchises. People in the on the Reddit thread were suggesting Infamous, SOCOM, Jack and Daxter, Metal Gear, Silent Hill. Silent Hill is long overdue.
I mean, Silent Hill, I feel like it's everyone is willing it into existence except for Konami.
But then again, something is with that where the Silent Hill website trademark had lapsed or something, and then Konami missed re-upping it, so someone else stole the website or something. So it's classic. Like they're not really on it when it comes to that. They should be. But
I feel like I don't think that it'll be SOCOM, would it? Like that doesn't feel like.
I mean, is there a window for like a third-person military shooter? Maybe.
I feel like, wow, are we not kind of done and dusted on that whole front now? With like Call of Duty Vanguard being a thing that is just going to perpetuate itself forever more. Like, are we just done with war shooters?
It's weird because
2042 was just such a mess that like.
Well, yeah, there is that. The thing is, I miss third-person shooters. I especially miss like SOCOM was great. Like all the different tactical breach options you had and stuff. Like if you could Comfort Desert Storm, like there's a window I would say to do that kind of thing.
Just
like,
PlayStation do the Division, need more third-party third-person games.
Well, I mean, third-person tactical shooters would like drill it down. But I know what you mean. The Sony formula is like over-shoulder, light crafting components. Here's a workbench. That's the workbench genre is very much in vogue at the minute. But
Now they've got Destiny as their first-person shooter exclusive. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, it's not exclusive. Yeah, I guess it might be at some point in the future if they do something with it, or it depends what a new IP is. If it's Killzone, that's boring. Ooh.
You know what, I'm going out on a limb and I'm going to say that it's going to be, is it Heavenly Sword? We're going to get Heavenly Sword 2.
Heavenly Sword.
It's about time. Although those guys are doing Hellblade. Let's see what a tag on Heavenly Sword as the companion. Maybe it's the fabled Jack 4, realistic Jack and Daxter game where he's weasel on a man's shoulder. Possibly take that. It was real for a time. It became The Last of Us. But we'll have to wait and see what happens for the rest of this month. Now that we are in March, assumedly, this state of play will be coming together. And according to the various leakers, it's a big show. They've got a lot of different things to show off. And whether that's just PlayStation VR 2 or whether it's something like the Game Pass equivalent or whatever comes together. But we'll have to wait and see. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me.
And James Dowse.
Peace and love.
And we'll catch you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.